So Maha, let's talk about prostate cancer, and we're going to ask the audience a question, and that question is, at what point would you generally recommend a PARP inhibitor to a patient with metastatic prostate cancer and a germline BRCA mutation? Would you have the patient get one line of hormonal therapy, chemo in addition, or both? And we'll see how the audience responds while they're sort of thinking about it, Maha. Can you kind of provide an overview of what we know about PARP inhibitors and pancreatic prostate cancer, and right now kind of where it's fitting in sure. Your algorithm? The audience is saying, after one line of therapy, how do you approach it?
So I want to distinguish, first of all, in metastatic prostate cancer, we have disease entities or spaces. One is metastatic castration or hormone sensitive space. That at this moment, PARP inhibitors are not indicated in that space. There certainly is the potential for research in this area, but there is no data at this moment. The other space is it's all metastatic, but now it's castration resistant prostate cancer. Where the FDA approval is for rucaparib and for olaparib is technically in the second line setting. So this is a situation where a patient was on hormone treatment. They might have seen chemo for hormone sensitive disease or AR targeted agents, and now they have progressed despite castrate testosterone with disease progression. Technically, I don't think it's wrong to give the patient consideration for olaparib, for example, or rucaparib in that setting if they have the right mutations. Having said that, technically, the FDA indication is not in this space. This is in a situation whereby a patient developed castration-resistant disease, received frontline treatment for castration-resistant disease, whether it's chemotherapy or AR-targeted drug, and now they progressed. This is where then it's at the second progression is where the actual space is. We do have clearly clinical trials that are going on in the frontline castration-resistant disease combination trial and single-agent trial. But I would say, based on the current labels, which I shared in my slides, that would be the specific indication.
So you all are saying that ovaries leading the way and, you know, pancreas and prostate are kind of picking up, breasts are sort of in between. I don't know. I think prostate has a couple edges on you all that we haven't heard of. It comes out pretty well in this case. This is really amazing to me, some of the trials that are going on in prostate cancer. Keeping in mind, you know, think about ER-positive breast cancer or hormonal therapy, standard of care. So hope we're talking about trials now looking at PARP inhibitors in prostate cancer before getting hormonal therapy, which is sort of unbelievable, at least for metastatic disease. But in any event, Maha, tell us about this 69-year-old man.
Absolutely. So this gentleman is 69 years old. 12 years ago is when he was diagnosed with his prostate cancer. So then he was in his late 50s. So relatively speaking, younger man. He went through surgery. The standard of care till today is radical prostatectomy with pelvic lymph node dissection, and actually had very bad pathology, pathologic T3 with node positive disease and a Gleason 8, which puts him at a very high risk disease. He basically within a short period of time developed metastatic disease in the bone, and bone and lymph node are the two most common sites of metastatic disease, for which androgen deprivation treatment is the standard of care. And by the standards of 2009, pretty much androgen deprivation in the form of castration would be the standard of care.
We should point out that subsequently now people get stuff added onto that.
Oh, we have loads. Absolutely. We have multiple lines of therapy.
Ago.
But that's 2009, exactly.
2009.
This was 11 years ago. We all were kids at the time. So, the gentleman went into a response, and the response, as you can see, can be several years in the setting of prostate cancer, even with metastatic disease. By 2014, he developed PSA rises, and with the castrate testosterone, he technically is now frontline castration-resistant prostate cancer, for which he received cipilucel T, which is an immune therapy, and had some palliative radiation. To cut it short, he elected to kind of had sort of stable disease and basically PSA was slowly rising, but he elected to kind of hold off on changing treatment because he was asymptomatic. About two years later, he now develops another rising PSA. He undergoes through germline testing, and he's found to have BRCA2 mutation. And so his PSA was constantly rising, and then he was enrolled in one of my trials. And the trial is randomizing patient to AR-targeted therapy or alone or olaparib alone or a combination. And we can chat more about, you know, the rationale for the design. And this is frontline castration-resistant disease. And basically, he went on treatment, responded with olaparib, responded by PSA and imaging, and was on treatment for almost 2 years. And so when you think about that kind of response, it's pretty dramatic in the setting of a castration-resistant situation, much more so than we see normally.
You know, one of the things that's so interesting, though, is, you know, typically this man would have gotten enzalutamide or, you know, abiraterone, and would, you know, very high likelihood of very good response. And yet this trial is not only looking at PARP alone, but I think the third arm is both, right, combined?
Yes, and this is actually stemming from a prior trial that I had done with veliparib. And the surprising thing, so that trial basically was a randomization without preselection, taking patients with frontline metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer. Every patient had to go through a metastatic disease biopsy, and the patients were stratified by the ETS gene fusion status, and this is the only reason we did that is because there was data suggesting that these types of fusions might predispose patients for better response to PARP inhibitor. Surprising to us in that trial, the combo of veliparib and abiraterone was not that much better than abiraterone alone. So veliparib didn't seem to add for the overall population. We had over 70 patients who actually had additional tissue from their tumor biopsies that were part of the prostate cancer stand up to cancer group where we tested their genomics. And surprisingly, the patients who had HRR mutations or DNA damage response defects basically responded better to AR-targeted therapy, irrespective of whether they were on the combo or not. And so as we moved forward, we thought we would do it this way because, frankly, if you respond to one treatment, why do you need to get both unless there is better effect? But if there is no better effect, then sequential therapy could be just fine, which is what this trial is trying to answer.
And before Hope comments, you know, also thinking about quality of life, I mean, and androgen deprivation plus, you know, enzalutamide or abiraterone is not necessarily a walk in the park.
Indeed.
Not necessarily going to be, you know, as well tolerated as a PARP inhibitor. But Hope, I just thought it was fascinating that they had this strategy in the trial. Any thoughts about it, Hope? And also moving forward, Hope, of course, we're hearing a lot about combinations, combining hormonal therapy and PARP. You mentioned you already did that. Checkpoint inhibitor and PARP. Any comments about, you know, maybe the optimal way moving forward, Hope?
Well, I mean, I think that this information, prostate cancer has been fascinating, I think, not just in patients who have germline mutations, but even some HRD, et cetera. It's just been really, really interesting. I think that also with prostate cancer, you know, patients won't have received chemotherapy generally in this situation yet. And that's probably a benefit as well, as opposed to our patients with, you know, aggressive triple negative breast cancer, where they will have gotten chemotherapy in the early stage setting. There, you know, immunotherapy is rising in triple negative breast cancer. And we just saw another press release about improvement in PCR rate with atezolizumab after the large pembrolizumab KEYNOTE-522 trial. And I think there's a lot of interest in what to do about patients who maybe aren't having as much of an immune response. And there's a lot of interest in putting PARP inhibitors together with immunotherapy to enhance the immune response through interferon and the STING pathway. And so that's being actively studied in a number of different settings. Where we go to in terms of treating patients in the, you know, early and late stage setting remains to be seen. We obviously are anxiously awaiting the data from the adjuvant Olympia trial, which will give us some information about adjuvant PARP inhibition in higher risk patients. And I think that's going to help also stimulate a whole other group of trials that will look at patients who maybe have HRD This veliparib recent data about interactions with chemotherapy is fascinating, and there are going to be additional studies that look at that as well. So, in breast cancer, I think the frustrating part for us has been the rapid acquisition of resistance in a large number of patients. And so if some of these strategies can help to delay development of resistance, put the PARP inhibitors earlier in the course of therapy, it will make a big difference, I think, in terms of our use of PARP inhibitors for not just patients with germline mutations, but others as well, looking at somatic mutations in HRD.
Thank you so much to the faculty for tonight. Thank you all for coming.